Hey, cashiers. We Have the Receipts podcast is coming at you live from Netflix is a Joke Fest in Los Angeles.
Chris, are you kidding?
No, Netflix is a joke, Courtney, but this is not one of them. Our listeners in LA have the chance to join us for a live recording of our podcast, We Have the Receipts, hosted by me, Chris Burns.
And me, Courtney Revolution.
Join us and a few surprise guests from your favorite Netflix reality shows on Saturday, May 4th at 1 p.m. at a secret location in Hollywood.
To be announced.
Get your tickets for the We Have the Receipts live show at tudum.com/WHTR. That's Tudum, TUDUM.com/WHTR.
Tickets are limited. If you can't make it to the show, we still want to hear your beautiful voice. Leave us a message at speakpipe.com/WeHaveTheReceipts.
You may even hear your own voice on the show.
Grab a ticket at tudum.com/WHTR.
And we'll see you on May 4th in Los Angeles. Bye, cashiers.
I woke up on the morning of my 30th birthday and was like, I feel fabulous. It's like, this is the best day ever. And it sort of continued. I feel an inner peace and I'm going with it.
You're listening to Skip Intro with me, Krista Smith. Dakota Fanning has yet to miss a beat since she started acting in commercials at 5. She went on to work steadily as an actor while going to high school, being a cheerleader, and going to NYU. She sidestepped the usual tale of breaking into the industry through kids programming and instead dove headfirst into the world of auteur Hollywood filmmaking. At just 7 years old, Dakota stole our hearts with her debut film performance in I Am Sam, opposite Sean Penn and Michelle Pfeiffer. For that performance, she was nominated for a SAG Award. Over the next decade, audiences saw her grow up in films like Man on Fire, War of the Worlds, The Secret Life of Bees, and The Runaways. At only 30 years old, she's already amassed 72 acting credits on IMDb and has taken on a diverse catalog of genres and characters across both film and television. In recent years, Dakota has starred in the series The Alienist, reteamed with her Man on Fire co-star Denzel Washington in The Equalizer 3, and was almost unrecognizable in Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It was that last performance that led to Steve Zaillian casting her in the 8-part limited series, Ripley. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Based on the Patricia Highsmith novels, the series stars Andrew Scott in the title role, Johnny Flynn as Dickie Greenleaf, and Dakota as Marge Sherwood.
It was so fun knowing that I was going to get to see you in this capacity and finally get to do a real interview and have you on the podcast.
Yeah.
I went and rewatched all our video that we've done over the years when I was at Vanity Fair. And a few of them stood out when you did Runaways and we were at Sundance. And I remember we were just squashed on a bed. Back in the early days, we were like you and Kristen. I'm like moving the microphone. I just love having watched you grow up and have always been amazed at just how you've navigated the industry in your career. So I'm just at the top going to say that I'm super impressed by that.
Oh,
and I have to find those little notes that you and your sister Elle, your mother would always have you write notes and thank you notes, and they'd be dropped off at the office with your home address or whatever it was. It was so cute.
It was instilled in us early on, the note writing, so that it endures.
Yeah, it does endure. All right, well, let's talk about Ripley.
Yeah.
Because this series is magnificent. There's so much to digest here and explore. I could just sit there and have it wash over me. The performances are so strong. The story, obviously, we think we kind of know, but I really feel like Steve Zaillian gives this the room that it needed always, having this be a series. I want to talk about, for you, Marge Sherwood, okay? So you obviously had to have been familiar a little bit with the IP, right?
Sure, yep.
What drew you to this and why did you want to play her?
Well, I knew about the project and just as a person, as a viewer, I was like, oh, I can't wait to see that. Again, like you're saying, having 8 hours to explore these characters that you kind of think you know, whether through the book or through the film or whatever adaptation. But having that amount of time, I was like, oh, that's going to be amazing. And I was such an admirer of Steve's and of Andrew, and I had never met Johnny, but I was so excited. And so this, when I became the person that Steve wanted to play Marge, I was like, wait, I was just gonna watch that. I was overcome with excitement. I'll never forget it. I was like in my kitchen, it was nighttime. I was like, well, he wants to talk to you and send you the script. I was like, but you have to just tell him that I'll do it if he wants me to. I don't need to read the script. Like, I don't need to decide. Then I spoke to Steve, and just hearing his vision for it and how devoted he is to the story and the characters, you just knew that you were going to be supported by that devotion. He was going to really be such a specific person and so detailed, and you were always going to know exactly where you stood and if you were doing what he wanted, and there was never going to be any confusion. And that's what I like as an actor. I want to do what feels good to me, but also what the director's kind of looking for. And so I knew I would really have that with Steve, and reading the scripts, they're so brilliant, and it almost feels like you're reading a novel when you're reading the scripts. They're so detailed and really extraordinary. So I wanted to do it from the beginning. I also thought it was so interesting that the scripts are kind of written from Tom's perspective, and so it leaves room for the other characters. You have to kind of create Marge's reality on your own, and that's separate from Tom's reality, and then figuring out where they intersect and where they diverge, and also getting to play a character that doesn't trust Tom from the very start. So many of the characters are great and the performances are brilliant, but they're kind of fooled by Tom, you know, and I got to play one that wasn't, and so I was super excited by that, and I knew that would be really fun to do those scenes with Andrew, and it was.
Your dynamic with him is just everything in this series. It was so great just to watch two actors at the top of their game kind of going at it with spectacular material. And it was this tension between almost admiration, because you think Marge almost admires him as she's looking at him, but at the same time threatened by him, obviously. How was that to play, first of all, with Andrew Scott, which he's amazing in this. Half of America knows him as the hot priest.
Yeah.
And then All the Strangers, obviously, was his film last year that was spectacular.
Spectacular.
But he's such a terrific actor. How were some of those scenes? What was happening when you guys were breaking and then coming back?
Tom and Marge want the other one to drop dead. You know, it's like, and it is so clear. And Steve would cut, and Andrew and I, we would just look. You bitch. Like, we just were so, like, and we loved it, and then we'd crack up. We had to bring that play to it and bring that kind of joy and laughter, because it's that tension where you would do these scenes between the two of us and, okay, cut, what happened? And then your whole body relaxes. You know what I mean? You realize you've been squeezing, because it's just like energy, 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 but it's that silent, quiet energy, which is harder than running all day. I mean, you at the end of the day, you feel like you've run all day. I love doing it.
Where's Dickie?
Rome.
Rome?
You didn't get his letter?
No.
Oh, it must be at the post office.
I was just there.
Oh, then.
What are you doing, Tom?
I'm doing what Dickie asked me to do. I'm taking him some things he wants in Rome. He said he was going to write to tell you he's staying there for a while.
A while meaning what?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure he's sure. Until the end of winter, at least, he said.
He's not coming back all winter.
Oh, no. I'm sure he'll be back to visit and to take care of some things.
We're still going to Cortina, though.
No, actually, he's not. He said he was going to write to, what's his name, Freddie? And to tell him. Over there, you should go. He made a point of saying that.
That I should go. Without him, like I'd do that.
I'm just telling you what he said, Marge.
I was happy to not just be totally a pawn in Tom's game, you know, as Marge, that I got to kind of have my own thing. But I think you see her own opportunistic tendencies come out sometimes. And, oh, maybe Tom's not so bad when he compliments her on her book. You know, it's like, so you get to explore that vanity and that opportunistic quality in her as well. And I think that's also deeply human, too. You know, I think ultimately we're in this series and with these characters, you're exploring people and what people are capable of, for better or for worse. Just the closest you can get to living inside someone else's head. That's kind of how I feel about this, you know? Because you get to see the characters moment to moment. Nothing's kind of glossed over. You get to see how everyone does everything that they do and kind of the intentions behind it. And you almost feel like you're reading everyone's thoughts through their eyes, which is what I like to do as an actor and kind of bring that to most parts that I play, is like kind of finding what's underneath and not focusing on like the exterior or the words or the physicality, but figuring out what is underneath that person, what's inside, and then going from there, because I just think that's how people are, you know? And really got to do that in this.
The world is so lived in, right? I mean, the world that you all inhabit. There's no heroes here also, which I think is really interesting to bring it up, and that's something that I felt. Like, Marge's vanity, I mean, she's kind of awful.
She's also a little bit awful.
She's kind of awful.
Absolutely.
I mean, I know we sympathize with her, but she's kind of awful.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's no winner necessarily, which made it so interesting that you're actually rooting for Tom Ripley in some way. Between Andrew and Steven together, they manipulate the audience. You're actually like, wait, don't get caught.
Yeah,
get
I
caught.
Know,
wait, I
know,
don't know. I'm
I know,
confused.
I know, I know.
You want to know what to think. But the sets are magnificent. Obviously, you shot all over Italy. We'll get to black and white in 1 second. But the audience is brought all through Italy, and so much of the aesthetic plays through the series. But the houses and the steps and the rooms, obviously the ashtray. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I would imagine acting and working in a space that's so realized must be really comforting.
Really comforting, yeah. There was no detail left unnoticed, no stone left unturned with the sets. And I found Steve rearranging the knitting needles in the knitting basket in my house. I'm not kidding, you know what I mean? It was towards the end, and I was like, Steve, you got... put them down, please. But that's his brilliance. There's that moment of close-up of the knitting basket, and it's this kind of perfect mess, and it says something about March, you know? I mean, it's there for a reason. Nothing is there just because. It's all placed, and everything is important. Every shot is important. Every moment is important. Every costume's important. Every pillow is important. And I mean that fully. And I think it was very refreshing to, listen, I've been doing this a long time, and you work with all different kinds of people and you work in all different kinds of circumstances. And, you know, a lot of the times it's like, hurry, 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 and rush, 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 and oh, maybe it's fine, and okay, whatever, on set when you're working, and it can feel that way, and you have to go, oh, well, that doesn't matter, or oh, they'll never see it. That was not ever said. It was not ever said, oh, that doesn't matter, that isn't important, like, you know, everything was important. Every character was important. Everything was given equal importance, which is challenging. You know, that's challenging to live in that where everything is important. And when I watched it, it kind of all clicked. I mean, I knew in the moment, wow, this is really spectacular and very a special experience. But then I watch it and you like see how him rearranging those knitting needles did do something, you're like, oh my God, like, whoa, you know? And so it was a good kind of reminder to always keep that importance on the details that I think Steve taught me a lot. And the sets, the locations, the cities, actually being in the place that you're supposed to be, the specificity of the cities, I mean, they're all so different from one another and have such a different vibe and play a different role in the series. Naples to Venice to Amal, it's just like they bring a different tone because they're all so different from one another. And having the luxury of actually being there where you're, you know, where it's all written that you're supposed to be, that's also a rarity these days. So I didn't take any of that for granted, or I tried not to take any of that for granted. And it was a long road. It was a lot of hard work from a lot of different people. Watching it was a very kind of moving experience for me because it all kind of came full circle, and anything that didn't make sense to me before all made sense in like the blink of an eye, you know. It was like actually very special.
Yeah, it's interesting his choice, speaking of his specifics, to make it black and white.
Yeah.
Especially when Tom Ripley is going through these museums and there's so much art. I mean, the Picasso is its own character, and the Amalfi Coast is its own character, and the boat and the water, but yet it's black and white.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, wow, this is going to be interesting. And like I said, it washes over you. I can't imagine it in color. It's almost like the color would have been distracting.
Would have been too much.
much from the story.
It would have been. I just heard Steve talk about this today. Because I didn't question black and white. He said it's in black and white. I said, great. whatever. I didn't think about it. But was excited at the thought of it because I haven't been in something that's in black and white, so I kind of got to mark that off the list. But he feels that Patricia Highsmith's novel is a noir, and noirs are in black and white, and so therefore it's in black and white. It's like very simple for him. He didn't jump through any hoops to making it in black and white. It was like obvious. So, and I think he also wanted to lean away from the postcard of Italy and the La Dolce Vita lifestyle kind of vibe, which has a time and a place, and I got to experience it firsthand, which was wonderful. But for the purposes of this, you needed a certain moodiness and a certain tone. And, you know, you're seeing a lot of these places. You're seeing the Amalfi Coast, but in the off season, in the winter. So you're seeing a different version. And I now watch it, I'm like, the color would hurt my eyes, you know, because it's about like that kind of the underbelly of Italy. And it plays a character, but not in the way that we're used to seeing it play a character. So I can't imagine it in color, but like I said, he said it was in black and white, and I said, great.
So you said earlier, you've been doing this a long time. I mean, obviously, I Am Sam was your first big role. You turned 7 on that set.
Yeah.
Sean Penn, amazing actor, Michelle Pfeiffer. I imagine along the way, you've learned something from everyone you've worked with, even when you were so little. Whatever you were observing, you were collecting that information as you go along. So now you're on this set, you're in your late 20s, right? Because we'll talk about your 30th a little bit later. do you still go on set and learn things from, let's say, Johnny Flynn, who plays Dickie Greenleaf, and Andrew Scott, who we've just talked about as Tom Ripley? I mean, did you learn something from them? And if so, can you share that? And also, do you take something from every one of your projects?
Yeah, I definitely still learn things. I mean, you work with actors who work all kinds of different ways, and you kind of learn what they need and what they, you know, how they are, and you can sometimes have to adjust your, you know, it's like if somebody's doing, you know, they're doing an emotional scene, well, you're not going to come in and suck up all the air out of the room and start talking loudly. You're all working together, and you're trying to support one another and also protect what you're doing at the same time. And Andrew and Johnny, I mean, Johnny's like gentle and kind and sweet and like soft, and he brought that to Dickie. You know, you kind of got to see his real personality mix with Dickie Greenleaf, who he's very different from, but he brought like a softer vibe to Dickie. And so kind of seeing how he brought his artfulness to a character that can come off a certain way. I think with Andrew, this is like a tour de force performance for him, and just seeing the focus and the nuance that he brought to everything, and the subtlety, and being taken out of takes sometimes, just in my head, being like, oh my God, he's so good, you know?
You believe that? I mean, even if you knew my parents, you'd never think they'd go this far.
So who was the guy in the bar?
A private detective. My father hired a private detective.
To find Tom?
Yes.
Are you hard to find, Tom?
Well, I just moved, so yes, I guess so.
Why'd you wait to tell Dickie?
What difference does that make? You're missing the point of the whole saga, Marge. It's about my father, not Tom.
Have you decided what you want to see next?
Excuse me?
In Italy.
No. I haven't.
There's a lot to it.
I'm sure there is, but I think I'm going to stay here for a little while.
You know, if you're going to be here longer, Tom, you should stay at my place. I mean, why spend money at the Miramare when I have extra rooms, even if it is just my father's money?
I'd like that very much.
Andrew also started when he was very young, and so that was something that we talked about a lot. We talked about how our relationship with acting has changed or not changed. And it's not often that I work with people that started as young as I was, but he did a lot of theater when he was younger, and so he was working professionally from a really young age, and it's rare that I find somebody that also has done that. And so we talked about that a lot, and I felt I could relate to him in a way that I'm not used to with mm-hmm. other actors. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so unique. I mean, also because you weren't in kids' movies.
Exactly.
You were in adult movies. You were in R-rated films,
exactly.
you know?
Yeah.
You weren't on a kid-specific show, which is so interesting.
Yeah.
Is there one particular film where you felt you made the switch from, like, child actress to your own kind of autonomous artist?
What I feel, and I think what other people feel, is always different.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
I'm sure I have one, but
yeah,
I'm curious.
I know. There were certain things, it's like, well, I'm older now, I can do that. But I never wanted to have my choices informed by, like, I have to prove that I'm an adult and edgy or something, you know what I mean? So I just wanted it to happen naturally, and I feel like it did. But everyone always says something different of, well, really, this is your first performance as an adult. I'm like, okay, whatever makes you happy. Everyone also has a different idea of when you're an adult, too. But for me, maybe this in some weird way. I'm not sure. Because, you know, sometimes you play a lot of daughters of people. And there's something that happens when you're not playing someone's daughter, you know, and you're just, like, existing in a space on your own without, like, a parental figure. Maybe because when I was younger, it was so Sean Penn played my dad. It was always parental figures, like these really amazing actors playing a parent of mine. And so maybe it's in the roles where you didn't know who my parents were. The character is seen on their own and not like within a family. Maybe that made me feel like it's adult. I've tried to work very hard to let that perception go and not worry about it too much, you know?
You're 30 now. I want to hear all about the birthday. But you've done some incredible work. I think about in your 20s while going to NYU. And I mean, for me, it's The Alienist. I love, I loved you in that role. And obviously, where Steve Zaillian said he basically knew you were his Marge in Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where for me, I mean, jaw was on the ground when that door opens and you realize who Squeaky Foam is. And it's, you know, you are totally different.
Yeah.
From anything anybody had ever seen for you.
Yeah.
But, okay, 30. So tell me about the party. What happened?
I had a big party. It actually fits in with being in Italy for so long. I was at this restaurant called La Dolce Vita in LA, and I had sweatshirts made that said La Dakota Vita with the date. And so everyone had to participate in La Dakota Vita for one night. But it was so fun. I've had like beautiful birthdays where they're like dinners and I've done special things, but this was the first time that I just had like a big party and invited all the people that mean something to me and that are in my life from the beginning until now. And it was so special and so fun. And I had people of all different ages from all different parts of my life assembled, and it was just the best. I loved it, and I feel so happy a month into my 30s. It seems so weird because I don't know if it's real or not, but it feels real, so I'm just going with it. I just like felt so much lighter and happier, and I've always never been somebody that would describe myself as insecure or like lacking confidence. Of course, everyone has insecurities and has moments of self-doubt, but I feel that I'm a pretty secure person, but I totally just had that thing that I woke up on the morning of my 30th birthday and was like, fabulous. It's like, this is the best day ever. And it's sort of continued. I feel an inner peace and I'm going with it.
Oh, I love it. Elle's posts every year.
Oh
I look
God,
forward.
They're so funny, I know.
I look forward to
Me too. Me too. I like woke up earlier than she had posted it, and I was checking my Instagram, reloading. I was like, where's the post? Where's the post? I need that. I look forward to it every year.
She's an auteur at it. Let's
really
put it this
is.
Way.
She's unbelievable at it. And she's the person that knows me best in the world besides our mom.
How has it been having Elle by your side? I don't even know of any other siblings that have really started it. And again, she was not in movies made for children.
Yeah.
where you have had each other, good and bad, I imagine. I don't know if the two of you have gone up for same roles, but like next to each other through all of this and trying to maintain a childhood and having the same mother. What has been the good and the bad of that?
Yeah, I mean, especially as we both get older and we're 4 years apart, and that gap now is like we're basically the same age at this point. You know, we feel like there's no gap anymore. I feel so like unbelievably grateful to have a sibling. I just can't explain what it means to me. It's like the best thing ever. And we've always been close. We are very close still. I think it's probably helped us even more than we actually realize, but just knowing I don't have to explain what I'm doing today to her. I'm doing press for Ripley today. She knows exactly what that means to the detail. Even just having that, where you just feel understood by somebody, not just because they're your sister, but because they do the same thing that you do, so they understand it the same way that you do. And I'm so grateful for that. As far as the bad, I mean, we feel so different from one another. We're obviously similar. We come from the same family and we're raised with the same values and have a lot of similarities, but our personalities are extraordinarily different. Like I could read something and go, oh, that's not me, that's Elle, and vice versa. And I see like performances that she's done and I'm just like so blown away. And I'm like, only she could do that, you know? And so, to me, there's no bad that has come from doing the same thing as her. It's all good. And if there's anyone that I would want the things that I want for myself, I would want them for her too. When one of us wins, we both win. And that's how we were raised, where family is the most important thing and you're kind of in or you're out, you know? And then we have our production company together too, that we're doing things with together and separately. And that's really fun because again, anything that I do, I want her to come along for the ride. And I think she feels the same way about me. So it's very special and I'm very grateful for it and love her very much and seeing her in a couple hours.
I love her too. She's great. Tell her I said hi.
Yeah.
Okay, so your mom. I have to talk about your mom. Having seen your mom throughout the years of your career and knowing when I was at Vanity Fair, I was like thinking like, when was this? We were dying to do an event with you guys and it was like clap down. No, 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 no. You really had such a protected childhood, even though you were in the center of pop culture and people felt possessive of discovery of you. Talked a little bit about it with the kind of value system. But was that hard as a teenager not to be able to go out or go to these parties or clubs? Or was it completely you didn't even know about it?
I got to do that the way that the kids I was going to high school with were doing it in private. I didn't need to be 15 at a Hollywood party and I almost didn't even want to do that. I wanted to like go to the high school party. Importance was always placed on those experiences equally to obligations or work. And I always had people, my mom, my first agent, who was my agent from the time I came to Los Angeles until I was 18, Cindy, they protected me from things and made sure that I got to enjoy my life also, and it wasn't all just work. I mean, I don't look back on my childhood and go, oh, all I did was work. I don't feel that. I'm like, no, that year I did that movie at that time, but then I was home. I mean, you know what I mean? And then I don't remember it because it was so boring at home. Like, you know, the things that I really remember are the really special stuff I got to do, and the other stuff was just like sitting around eating mac and cheese with Elle. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, happily boring.
Yeah.
I did get to explore and I did get to make mistakes. I went to a regular high school and I found this group of people that are still my best friends to this day who protected me from someone taking a picture of me somewhere. You know what I mean? Like they were protective, but in a normal way, we weren't at Hollywood parties. And I guess I didn't even really think about it. No, I was in high school and like enjoying that.
Also, social media wasn't crazy
and
then.
And didn't have an Instagram until my senior year. So all of that was different. That was different. It's changed so much. Even Elle's experience was different than my experience. And we have a younger cousin. Her experience was like completely different. I'm like, oh my God, I feel very grateful to have not.
Says
not
the girl that was lifted up by Orlando Bloom.
Yeah. That's now all over social media, by the way. Like, that was supposed to stay in the past. That was before the Critics' Choice Awards were televised. It was just a banquet, and it was, like, filmed for the BFCA. I'm like, leave that where it was.
Sorry, not sorry.
No, I know. It's really funny. I love it. I do.
It's
I really
so
love
good.
It.
Come on, and he doesn't know what to do, and he comes back for my listeners that are going to be like, what the hell are they talking about?
Go find it.
You go find it, first of all. You won a Critics' Choice for I Am Sam. You're 7 years old. You go to accept it, and you go up, and the microphone's like 3 feet above you. And sweet Orlando Bloom, who's,
Orlando Bloom was presenting with Sean Astin. They were babies and in Lord of the Rings. And my publicist, Robin, represented Orlando at that time, and she represented Russell Crowe at that time.
Of course.
And so she was there sitting next to Russell, I think, because it was A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah.
And she remembers, she was like, I remember it. And then she became my publicist years later and very, you know, close person in my life. And he's holding me up. I think my mom and I had maybe talked about, like, well, if you win, you just thank so-and-so and so-and-so and, you know, whatever and that kind of thing. And so then I start and I just am thanking everybody. I am thanking everyone.
And he's standing there
holding me up. And it's really funny. It is really
funny.
Oh, my God,
it's so good. Okay, Elle turns 26 in a couple weeks. I didn't realize that on April 9th. I mean, what are we doing? Are we having a party for her?
I am working at the moment, so I am going to be away working. But she was away here in New York working for my 30th, so I don't feel guilty, I have to say. So I don't know what she'll do, but I will be working, and I'll miss it. That happens, you know. But yeah, 26.
Well, I'll be watching the gram. All right. So I am going to ask you the question I've been asking everybody this season. What film has had the biggest impact on your career? Whether you worked on it or you just watched it and it kind of informed you in such a significant way?
I'm going to go with something I was in just because I've thought about that the most. I Am Sam, probably, because it started everything and holds the very dearest part of my heart in relation to being an actor, because I was just a random little girl before that. That changed my life. And Jesse Nelson, who directed that, took care of me in a way, again, like what I was saying earlier about people really valuing me as a person in my childhood and those experiences. Jesse really set a precedent for that because she such a nurturing person, and it wasn't like business. It was like play, and I think that set me up to think of all projects like that and all movies or series like that. It changed my life, and people liked me in that movie, and so it gave me a sort of confidence of like, oh, I must know how to do something. Well, I'll do it again. It just kind of, then it goes and goes and goes. I will never forget, I was recognized for the first time with my mom at Century City Mall in LA at the Gap. And this person that worked at the Gap came up to me and was like, I know you. And I was like, oh, okay. And then she was like, I saw the movie that you were in. You were in I Am Sam. And I'll never forget that moment of going, oh my God. Oh my God, yeah, I was. And now you recognized me. Didn't feel like, oh, now I'm famous or something. It just was like, oh, you saw that thing that I did. Oh, and I'll never forget it. So it changed the whole trajectory of my life.
When was the last time you saw it?
Actually, recently, within the last few years. I love it. It's so cute. I mean, it's like watching a different person, you know. Of course I do.
Yeah.
And I can remember certain days and stuff and remember like what I was thinking. And the Critics' Choice Orlando holding me up embarrasses me more than I Am Sam, but I'm the same age. It's the same little person, you know?
Oh, well, it's so great to see you, Dakota,
it's
and
so
chat
good to
with
see you.
It's the same little person that's in the 30-year-old.
The same little person is still present. Yeah, exactly.
And you have an awesome decade ahead. I can't wait. And you're going to be in another Netflix thing. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, talk to you then.
We'll maybe talk then.
Yeah, right. Good.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Good to see you, too.
Ripley is streaming now on Netflix. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Krista Smith, your host and creator of the show. Skip Intro is produced and edited by Isabel Arricchio and engineered by Dave Corwin. Special thanks to our coordinator, Alyssa Hillman. Please subscribe, rate, and review Skip Intro wherever you've been listening. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Krista Smith. If you enjoy the podcast, please go to netflixqe.com for more. That's netflixqueue.com.